things like that. And they got to choose three questions out of all these terms that reproductive justice has. And I think a lot of youth, including myself, made a lot of assumptions on how to ask those questions and our responses that we were going to get back.
What would be an example of an assumption you brought into that?
Well, my first, we were going to ask what people thought of abortions and if it should be legal or not. My assumption was that many people were going to be against it. But in fact, most of them were really open about talking about abortion and supporting abortion as well.
So the conservative, the assumption that people were conservative in certain issues wasn't borne out, but there also is a range of even legal protections around abortion that often make it legal under very narrow circumstances. So social movements can end up getting in this bind where you use these horrific stories to win your argument morally and politically, you know, telling a story of someone who's just suffered terribly and who's been raped or victim of incest, and that, and there's quite a high percentage of people who will grant the legal right to abortion under certain circumstances, but will not unless there's a dramatic story. How did you deal with that issue in terms of the kinds of stories that win the argument?
Well, Momentum Alliance is all about storytelling and sharing your own story in your own way. Like Perla said, we had a lot of fishbowl activities, and it wasn't just about when we heard abortion stories about women who had a dramatic experience, but also allies that supported women on having an abortion and how that was. So there was like a lot of different point of views that went along with storytelling in our fishbowl activities that opened mind to, that helped the youth be open-minded.
Yeah, I think this issue of allies is maybe an important part of a project like this, where, because I think sometimes people can feel on the defensive or too exposed in a fishbowl exercise. But if you're encouraging people to take a point of view of someone else or be a supporter, that maybe opens a little more room for people to not feel so directly scrutinized. What, just in closing, I know there was another activity that your group is going to be in part of around abortion rights, the bus project. Can you say a bit about that and in closing?
Yeah, we opened up an opportunity for young people to become more involved in the reproductive justice movement, and there is a van going around the country, and it is put on by the Coalition for Abortion Access, and the movement or the van is called All Above All campaign, and it is building support for abortion funding. That's about all I can say about it right now, but if you want to know more about it, look up All Above All campaign.
Okay, and maybe we'll have you back to hear more about that bus and whether we all want to get on the bus. Okay, or be here to greet it. Thanks so much for being with us today. This is Carla Castaneda and Perla Alvarez with Momentum Alliance talking about the Reproductive Justice Summer Camp. Summer, keep up the good work.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that concludes our program for today. You've been listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Tom Becker. Joe Clement has been our engineer. Today's program will be podcast on the KVU website in the next day or two. You can either listen to the entire program or specific segments. You can also find links to more information about guests and topics, as well as past programs. If you want to learn more about the free store, you'll also find on our webpage an extended interview with Karen Carr, one of the store's founders. For more talk about the Portland Free Store, which will happen next at the Community Supported Everything building this Saturday, July 26th at 1 to 3 p.m. The CSE building is at 1626 Northeast Alberta. Tune into this extended version of their conversation where Karen expands on the anti-capitalist politics the Free Store aims to practice and popularize. Next Monday, we'll be airing part two of Bill Resnick's interview with Gwen Sullivan, president of the Portland Association of Teachers, and Elizabeth Teal, an activist teacher on the teachers' union follow-up plans after winning a contract that put them in a position to build more engaging schools and curricula. This is KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and Peña Flamenca de Portland are proud to co-sponsor Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. Pepe Rafael of Pepe and the Bottle Blondes will team up with Lily Last of Stomptown Flamenco for an evening of flamenco. Again, that's Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, located at Southeast 2nd Avenue and Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And yes, you do have it tuned to KBOO Portland. And as you know, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear an excerpt of a speech by Sandra Steingraber, biologist, author, and activist with New Yorkers Against Fracking. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein speaks with Patrick Martins, who co-authored the Carnivore's Manifesto, Eating Well, Eating Responsibly, Eating Meat. At 11 on Health Watch, host David Naiman speaks with award-winning journalist Paul Rayburn, author of Do Fathers Matter? They discuss the many myths and stereotypes of fatherhood. And at 11:30 on Health and Healthcare Forum, host Roberta Hall interviews Diana Rollman and Laurel Kinkle of OSU's Environmental Health Sciences Outreach and Engagement Program about new devices to monitor air pollution. And I want to thank KBOO members for your generous support for community radio. And if you're not a current member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm. Click on Donate Today. And now here's our little piece of the excerpt of the speech by Sandra Steingraber. She is a biologist, author, and activist with New Yorkers Against Fracking.
On July 13th, 2,000 people turned out in Washington, D.C. to protest the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC's, likely approval of a liquefied natural gas export facility in Cove Point, Maryland. The LNG port was originally built as an import terminal before fracking led to vastly increased natural gas production, which companies hope to export to consumers worldwide. Protesters in Washington voiced opposition to what they called FERC's rubber stamping of big energy projects. The director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, the group which organized the rally, asserted that the commission has never denied a permit for a large-scale electrical or gas project. The Cove Point, Maryland terminal, owned by Dominion Energy, is located in a middle-class community on the shores of Chesapeake Bay. If the proposed conversion from an import-to-export terminal is approved, critics say many more heavy industry components will be built, increasing the likelihood of an accident, such as a deadly vapor cloud. Protesters gathered on the National Mall for a rally before winding through the streets of the Capitol to the offices of FERC. The morning after the protest action, two dozen activists were arrested when they engaged in civil disobedience, blocking the entrances to the building and the parking garage. The activists' goal in the action was to raise the stakes while raising awareness of the issue among the general public and FERC employees. Sandra Steingraber, one of the speakers at the protest rally in Washington, is a biologist, author, and anti-fracking activist from New York State, which has thus far managed to maintain a fracking moratorium. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus was at the July 13th rally and recorded the following excerpt of Steingraber's speech.
We New Yorkers Against Fracking pledge our support, our assistance, and our solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Maryland who are fighting the LNG terminal in Cove Point. Our destinies are intertwined. Our success depends on yours. Now let me tell you about another small community in New York State. It's called Rossville, and it's located on Staten Island. When you go to Rossville, the first thing you see are two hulking 10 stories tall tanks. They cast a shadow over the whole community. They are 40 years old, and they are empty. They have always been empty. They are rusting, and birds now fly in and out of them. They were built to hold LNG, but they were never filled with LNG. Why? Because the actions of a community group in Rossville called Bring Legal Action to Stop Tanks. The acronym is BLAST. BLAST worked for 13 years to close those tanks down. Among the leaders of that community group were Gene Cosgriff and his wife, Edwina. Their house was located right next to one of these tanks. They knew that they would be instantly vaporized if an explosion occurred there. So why didn't they just move? Because Gene and Edwina had 18 children and very little money. Their church had helped them to find this house, and they knew they had no alternative but to plant their flag and fight. Gene and Edwina Cosgrove spent 13 years protesting, testifying, and attending every public hearing, and they were compelled to redouble their efforts in February 1973. When another LNG tank on Staten Island's northwest shore blew up, crushing 40 workers to death. The firefighters on the scene said the resulting fire was something out of Dante's Inferno. That explosion mobilized thousands of Staten Islanders to begin a fight to ensure a similar disaster would never happen again. So thanks to their work, we have a ban on LNG in New York State. My friends, the baton that Gene and Edwina Cosgrove carried in 1973 has been passed to us. And what has changed since the terrible LNG conflagration that killed 40 Staten Islanders 40 years ago? Nothing about the inherent hazards of LNG has changed. LNG is still a cryogenic fluid that must be stored at minus 259 degrees Fahrenheit. LNG will still flash freeze human tissue on contact. LNG is still heavier than air and will slither down drainage and sewer pipes and spread underground. And as it disperses, an LNG vapor cloud will still be combustible. LNG is still a known terrorist target. And as in 1973, an LNG fire is not extinguishable by any known firefighting technique. But here is what is different. In 1973, we didn't know yet about climate change. In 1973, we had never heard about fracking. Our stakes are so much higher today. So as we go about our work to do for Cove Point what the people of Rossville and Staten Island did for New York, we have something else to say, and it is this. To the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and to President Obama, we say we are not willing to blow up the bedrock of our nation in order to extract the fossil fuel called methane that will in turn blow up our climate. And we are not willing to liquefy the results using more fossil fuels and so give methane a passport to foreign markets and so further entrench a fossil fuel dependency around the globe in a time of climate emergency. We say no to that.
That was Sandra Steingraber, a biologist, author, and activist with the group New Yorkers Against Fracking, speaking at a July 13th protest rally in Washington, D.C. Learn more about opposition to fracking and LNG export terminals by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club, KBOO's all-vinyl guilty pleasure. Monday nights, midnight to 1 a.m. on 90.7 FM stereo and around the world at KBOO.FM.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. According to Patrick Martins, founder of Heritage Radio USA and Slow Food USA,